Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, The Importance of Taking Your Pills on Schedule, Understanding Adherence. A very important topic. It's particularly becoming important with, of course, the introduction of the targeted agents, some of the pills that you're taking, also for treatment side effect management, as well as for some of you who are taking pills not just for your cancer but other health problems. So this is so important, and we're happy to be able to offer this program today. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 851 participants, and you come from all over the United States. And we also have international participants from Africa, Canada, China, Ireland, Korea, Portugal, Syria, and the United Kingdom. So clearly it's a global call, and you're from all over the world, and it's really a credit to you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. And I would like to take your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's information about our speakers and the topics they're going to cover, and there's also information about all of our different collaborating organizations as important resources for all of you to access. Those are free resources for you all to use. And there also is an evaluation form, and I can't stress enough how important your feedback is to us as we move forward in planning future programs. So please take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. We cannot think of better people to tell us what we should be doing in these programs. Each of you are living this experience, and you have the best knowledge and ideas of what topics would be most helpful to you. And we take your recommendations quite seriously. And indeed, this topic today is one that many of you have said has been quite challenging and that you've requested us to offer this program. So tell us what you want, and we'll try very hard to implement those programs. Now, today's program is made possible through a grant from Astellas, and I really want to thank Astellas for their support of this program today. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Catherine Ruddy. Dr. Ruddy is instructor in medicine, Harvard Medical School, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Dr. Ruddy is going to address a number of issues. She's going to provide an overview of cancer treatments, a definition of adherence, taking your pills on schedule, its important role in the management of cancer and treatment side effects, and clinical trials. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Ruddy.
Hello, I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to speak with you all today. As Carolyn mentioned, I'm a medical oncologist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, and I specialize in treating breast cancer patients, mostly women, but also some men. I'm currently studying adherence in a large clinical trial of oral chemotherapy in patients over age 65 with breast cancer. I also recently wrote a review about adherence and persistence with oral therapies for cancer. As Carolyn mentioned, I will start this conference with an overview of cancer treatments. I will define adherence and persistence, and I'll discuss the important role of adherence in the management of cancer. And finally, I'll discuss clinical trials, the importance of adherence in these as well. Today's cancer treatments may include surgeries, radiation, chemotherapies, hormonal therapies, particularly for hormonally sensitive cancers such as prostate and breast cancer, and other non-chemotherapy drugs that kill cancer cells, which are sometimes called targeted therapies if they take advantage of a specific characteristic of the cancer cell to halt growth of the cancer. Surgeries, radiation, and intravenous chemotherapies are generally given in the hospital or oncology clinic. But some chemotherapies, hormonal therapies, and targeted therapies are given orally, and patients are asked to take them at home. For these therapies, the patients bear the burden of making sure they take the medications as directed. Most of my breast cancer patients do end up requiring an oral therapy at some point during their treatment. This is often tamoxifen or another anti-estrogen medication. And there is substantial evidence to suggest that many patients do not take their medications exactly as prescribed. I'm interested in helping patients follow instructions for taking cancer treatments as accurately as possible in order to optimize how well they do. So we say that a patient is adherent to a regimen when he or she takes his or her pills as instructed. In other words, if the pill is supposed to be taken with food every 12 hours, the patient takes it that way without skipping doses or taking extra doses. We say that a patient is persistent with a regimen when he or she does not stop treatment early. For example, if the patient is advised to take a pill daily for 5 years, he or she does not stop after 1 or 2 or 3 years, but actually completes to the full 5 years. In the old days, we used to refer to something called compliance rather than adherence and persistence. But we like the new terms better because they emphasize the active role that patients play in their treatment. Both adherence and persistence can be challenging for patients with many different medical problems, including cancer. It may not sound that difficult to take medications as prescribed, but I know from personal experience that it is. I actually had a baby 4 months ago, and during my pregnancy, I was supposed to take a prenatal vitamin every day. Given that the health of my unborn child was at stake, you would think that it wouldn't have been very hard to remember to do this, but I actually found that it was quite difficult. In the morning, I was racing around, getting ready for work, and I often forgot to take the vitamin. And then in the evening, I would stand in front of my medicine cabinet wondering whether I took the vitamin or not. I remembered meaning to take it, but I was frequently unsure whether I actually did. Many of you can probably relate to this. With a prenatal vitamin, I knew that taking an extra one wouldn't harm me or the baby, so I often erred on the side of doing that if I couldn't remember if I already took it or not. But with cancer therapies, which may be toxic if you take too much, this is a much more serious problem, and therefore adherence is both very important and perhaps particularly difficult. During my pregnancy, I was persistent with the prenatal vitamin in that I never stopped taking it entirely, but I wasn't that adherent in that sometimes I took more or fewer doses than I was supposed to. I think this is a problem that we have probably all faced at one time or another, whether related to cancer drugs, antibiotics, blood pressure medicines, or even just vitamins. A variety of studies have shown that adherence rates for many chronic drug therapies for a variety of health problems range in approximately 40 to 50%. And the World Health Organization has therefore cited adherence as the single most important modifiable factor that compromises treatment outcomes across diseases. In a review of published articles with the outcome including adherence, persistence, or compliance, or discontinuation of oral therapy in adult populations, my research mentor, Ann Partridge, found that adherence rates to cancer therapies ranged from less than 20% for some treatments up to 100% for others. Much of the research on adherence in oncology has focused on anti-estrogen treatments such as tamoxifen and aromatase inhibitors for breast cancer because breast cancer is so common and because these anti-estrogen treatments are such an important part of treatment for the majority of breast cancer patients. Recently, there's been more development, availability, and use of oral antineoplastic agents. We've improved our ability to control many cancers, even in advanced stages, such that many patients live for years and years with their cancers treated like chronic disease, such as diabetes or heart disease, and oral treatments are often a very important component of keeping cancers under control. In cancer treatments, the degree of adherence and persistence with the therapy may have substantial effect on the success or failure of oral regimens. Although cancer patients are perceived to be highly motivated with, quote-unquote, too much to lose, adherence and persistence are still major problems. Non-persistence is an issue for many regimens. For example, we know that patients who take only 1 year of tamoxifen after early-stage breast cancer do not get as much reduction in risk of recurrence as those who take 2 years, and they don't get as much reduction in risk as those who take a full recommended 5 years. Non-adherence is also an issue and has been associated with increased physician visits, hospitalization rates, and dose and regimen changes for many medications. For example, patients who miss doses of Gleevec for chronic myelogenous leukemia are more likely to experience complications from their disease. Both non-adherence and non-persistence can have serious implications for oncologic clinical trials as well, which I'll describe in a little more detail later. In some cases, I should say, when a drug is causing severe toxicity, non-adherence may actually be very appropriate, at least until a patient can get guidance from a healthcare provider. For example, when I prescribe the oral chemotherapy capecitabine, or Xeloda is the other name, to patients, I tell them to stop taking the drug immediately if they develop severe diarrhea or hand-foot pain, and to wait until they're able to speak with me before they consider restarting it. It's not just the anti-cancer drugs for which adherence is important. Adhering to medications that reduce side effects is often crucial to being able to receive effective cancer treatments. If my patients do not take their anti-nausea medications or anti-constipation medications as directed during their first cycle of intravenous chemotherapy, they're going to feel a lot worse and be less physically and emotionally ready for their second cycle of chemotherapy than if they adhered to the recommended regimen of medications. With toxic drugs like chemotherapy, medications that minimize side effects are extremely important, and they often do not work as well if doses are missed. For example, if a patient skips a few scheduled doses of Zofran, an anti-nausea pill, she may become so nauseated that she cannot swallow the pill later, and she could become weak and dangerously dehydrated. Moving on to clinical trials. These are the very important research studies through which we improve cancer therapies by testing whether one treatment is more helpful than another. They are essential to our ability to make progress in the war against cancer, as without them we cannot find better therapies. Adherence is crucial to clinical trials, because if patients who are on clinical trials don't take their medications as instructed, the results of the trial may be totally inaccurate. For example, a trial may not show that a new drug is better than an old one if the participants in the trial don't take many of the doses. Also, if the participants take more doses than they're supposed to, a given drug might appear to cause more side effects than it really would if taken as prescribed. Persistence also plays a major role here, as it's much more difficult to prove how many years an oral medication like tamoxifen should be taken if the patients on a clinical trial studying 5 versus 10 years of therapy do not finish the recommended course of treatment on the trial. In conclusion, adherence refers to taking a treatment the way that it's prescribed, and persistence refers to continuing the treatment as long as it is recommended. Like people taking medications for all sorts of reasons, many cancer patients have difficulty being adherent and persistent with their therapies. This is more and more of a problem as more and more of our cancer treatments are given by mouth at home. Clinical trials that test whether one drug is better than another will only have accurate results about benefits and side effects if the patients who are participating in the trials take their medications as directed. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be happy to take questions later in this call.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ruddy, for a wonderful presentation, really setting the tone for the program today and really identifying some of the key issues and the importance of taking one's pills on schedule. Thank you. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And thank you also for sharing your own experience with this, which really helps to make it seem so much more alive for everybody in terms of just understanding that you know the issues yourself as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe, or Dr. Lupe Palos. And Dr. Palos is Clinical Research Manager at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, Division of Medical Affairs, Department of Cancer Survivorship. And Dr. Palos is going to address barriers to taking your pills, practical tips to overcome these barriers, planning ahead, so lead time and refilling prescriptions, travel and weekends, and communicating with your healthcare team. And it's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Palos.
Thank you, Carolyn, for the opportunity to be involved in the discussion of such an important topic. And it's a topic that affects every one of us participating in this call. Why? Well, because at one time or another, any one of us has been prescribed medications for an ailment, or we take vitamins or herbal supplements to maintain our health, such as what Dr. Ruddy was explaining to us during her pregnancy. One thing that challenges every one of us, though, is the fact that we recognize the importance of taking our pills. We all recognize that as scheduled. But how can we when we live in such a busy world that operates on schedules, deadlines, and changes? The issues of taking meds on schedule becomes even more critical when managing a chronic disease such as cancer and other conditions that may affect us, such as hypertension, diabetes, arthritis, or other illnesses that require medications to control that particular condition. Dr. Ruddy gave us an excellent definition of adherence and persistence and an understanding of some of the responsibilities that we need to take in order to take our meds on schedule. As we heard, a key factor that she mentioned was effective communication between patients and the healthcare team, and that to make sure that everyone understands why a particular medication is prescribed. And then to take that a step further, it's also important to gather all the details, such as when to take that medication, how to store it, when to refill the prescription, what side effects to watch out for, whether the medication will interact with other pills, or will it even interact with some of the vitamins or herbal supplements that some of us take. However, as we all know, many of us struggle to keep up with the schedule of taking medication and in keeping track of all the details that I just mentioned on a day-to-day basis. Trying to keep track of 3 medications, 5 medications, or even 10 medications on a daily basis can be challenging for the patient, their caregivers, or family members. But why is that? Why do so many of us find it challenging to take medications as scheduled? And how can we, as caregivers or providers or patients, support ourselves in achieving optimal adherence in taking our medications? As a caregiver said to me once, how can you expect us to keep track of all those meds? My mom is 77 years old. She takes meds for her high blood pressure, for her arthritis, and for her cancer. And on top of that, she takes vitamins, drinks teas, and takes things like ginkgo. You can't believe what we have to go through to pack all those meds when we're coming to see the doctor or if we just want to go off for the weekend. It's impossible. Is this true? Is it impossible to find ways to deal with these issues or to plan ahead when travel is coming up or to work with your health care team on how to deal with the challenges of taking multiple meds as prescribed? I'm positive that many of you listening on this call know exactly what I'm talking about. You and your loved ones have been in these types of situations, and each one of you has a unique set of circumstances. But with preparation, planning, and preventive action, this experience, which can be a great source of stress, may be turned into a great opportunity to develop new strategies to maximize the benefits of medications prescribed your health. So I'll briefly address these questions in my discussion. I will also touch on how patients, caregivers, and healthcare providers can be proactive in asking specific questions about medications and how the family may support the patient in meeting their scheduled times for their medications. Let's begin by asking ourselves this question. What factors keep me from taking my medications as scheduled? These factors may include barriers such as not getting enough information about the medication. We may not know what questions we should be asking our providers about our meds. Sometimes we can forget to turn in our prescription or even to refill the prescription. There may be financial barriers, and if that is a problem, I'd like to remind you that our cancer care program provides services in this area, so you may wish to contact them after this call. Some patients have a hard time remembering to take medication on a long-term basis, such as what the types of medications that Dr. Ruddy was discussing. It becomes difficult for them to maintain that schedule for the remainder of years or months or a lifetime. Patients and caregivers may have concerns about side effects that can occur when taking meds, especially if there are many pills to be taken, or even if the patient is an elder, like 65 years or older for this discussion. Some meds may increase the risk of cognitive impairment in our older population. Many of us will also have concerns about the interactions that may occur between our meds taken to control a health condition, such as diabetes or hypertension, and those taken for our cancer, such as a pain medication that survivors may take who are experiencing late effects from the diagnosis or treatment. And often overlooked by providers but important to patients and family members, there may be cultural or religious beliefs, practices, or traditions that may influence one's decision to take medications as scheduled. Now take a moment and ask yourself, have you encountered these types of challenges? And if so, how did you deal with them? Perhaps those of you who have successfully dealt with these types of barriers may wish to share your tips with the audience during our question and answer period. Your information may help others in this call. During the exercise I just asked you to do to think about those barriers, you may have thought of your loved one who is living with cancer at this moment and the enormous struggles that the entire family goes through in dealing with one or several of these barriers. There is no doubt that the barriers to taking medication range from simple obstacles, such as I can't take the lid off the prescription bottle, to the more complex, such as how do I organize and maintain a schedule for taking 4, 8, or 10 pills every day. So a question many of you may have by now is how to deal with these barriers and how to keep track of them for taking the meds as scheduled. Well, I will share some tips on how to manage these barriers through a personal experience with my mother. I'm the primary caregiver for my 77-year-old mother, and as she has advanced in her age, the number of pills she needs to take on have increased also, the ones that she takes on a daily basis. These pills include those prescribed by her healthcare team, a few over-the-counter medications used for arthritis, daily vitamins and herbal supplements such as glucosamine, ginkgo, omega-3, and a few others that she probably doesn't tell me about. We have gone through many trials, failures, and successes, which I will share with you as lessons learned. First, we learned that it truly is important to have her take her meds as scheduled. This is now a mantra for our family, our nuclear family, extended church family members, and friends. We've learned that there are different ways to keep track of her schedule. We set alarms on an electronic basis, telephones, computers, iPads, and for those of us in my family who are not techie types, we have made posters of her meds, we have color-coded them to indicate the purpose, we make notes about the time, the dose, and how to take them. Is it by mouth and swallow? Is it by mouth and dissolve, or are they by injections? We have found that there's different ways to organize her medications. We have pill containers, just about every variety you can think of. We have them by the day. We have them by the week. We have them where you can take them apart and just take one for a certain day. And we have them where they're huge and you can keep them for like 4 weeks. The method that you decide to use to keep that schedule and to organize the medications are going to depend on your preferences and needs as well as the patient's preferences and needs. And some of these methods may also be helpful to you in your work setting. Some of you may be thinking, that sounds like that's going to be quite a bit of work. And yes, it may be up front, but it will minimize the risks of missed doses, incorrect meds being taken, or pills not being available when needed. Now let's continue to the second lesson learned. We've learned that it's the norm or a normal part of life that obstacles will change and increase over time and the course of a chronic disease. So we've just learned to accept those and not get so upset about them the way we did maybe initially. The third lesson learned is that we have found ways to deal with them, and one extremely helpful way is to maintain ongoing communication among her primary caregivers, her health care team, which includes the physicians, the office staff, the pharmacists, and even our invaluable pharmacy techs. The fourth lesson learned is we learned the importance of planning ahead of time whenever travel is scheduled. Travel can be a 40-minute drive to my sister's for an afternoon visit or a 5-hour flight for 10 days out of state. So here are some tips for preparing for any type of trip. One, keep a small bag with all the medications either stored in a prescription container or in their original bottles, depending on the length of the trip and the route of transportation. Two, keep a small index card in the family member's wallet as well as the patient's wallet, listing all the medications, their dosages, time to be taken, and how to be taken. On the back of the card, write down the names and contact information of the physicians or providers prescribing the medication, the pharmacy where the medications are obtained, and include emergency information for each provider and pharmacy. Ask your physician to write a letter stating that he or she has prescribed the following medications and have the list of the medications written there and make copies of the letter and give to each primary caregiver. When flying, encourage the patient or yourself to keep the medication with you on a small carry-on. Don't check them into the luggage. You may wish to keep your meds in their original container or in a pill container. This is when the letter from your physician comes in handy. Keep it in the bag with the meds and show it to the security folks when and if needed. Keep a schedule of when refills are due. This is very important and helps minimize the risk of being in another state or country and running out of medication. It's also helpful if you ask your pharmacy about their policies regarding refills if you lose your meds or run out of pills while out of town. Some pharmacies will provide enough refills to last until you get back home, or they may even reach a prescribing physician and get the medication that you need. And fifth and most important lesson that we have learned is to communicate with our prescribing providers, the pharmacy, the caregiver, and the patient. So let them know, the whole team, that there's a packed bag of meds that must travel with the patient whenever they're out of the house. We use this method with my mom, and it provides a sense of security. All my family, even my nieces and nephews, know that if you're going to take Grams out for a ride, take that pack of meds. Talk about the side effects and teach everyone else about the side effects experienced by the medications or some of the interactions that may occur. We've learned to really educate ourselves about missed doses. We've been warned about taking double doses and not to do that to make up for a missed dose. And we've learned about, you know, to ask questions about taking multiple medications. Do we do that all at once? Do we take some together and others not? Are they taken alone? Do we take them with food or no food? Just remember, each individual is unique in their response to different medications, so the answers to these questions will be tailored to meet the specific needs of the patient. And then just to share in the last moments a few practical tips that may also help to avoid missed doses or errors. Ask questions about your medications, especially the new ones, the name, the side effects, and all the other things that we spoke about previously. Ask how soon should the med begin to work and for how long, and what are the signs to show that the medication is working. Write down the responses, keep notes, share them with your caregiver team, and refer to them when needed. And finally, and most important, keep tabs on your own physical and mental health while taking your medications. Remind yourself to maintain a balance, plan ahead, and prioritize depending on your situation and your medications. My colleagues and I look forward to hearing from you and the suggestions you may have for those who you may be taking care of or the patients on how to take medications as scheduled. Thank you for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. This concludes my remarks.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Pelos. It's so wonderful what you said and so many helpful tips. And we are going to ask our audience as well to share some tips that they may have or thoughts that they have of how they remember to take their pills on schedule. So this is going to be a really our second half of the program will be more of a kind of a dialogue back and forth about this. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Patricia Spicer, and Pat is an oncology social worker, and she's program coordinator at Cancer Care. And Pat is going to review with you the services that Cancer Care offers and the importance of a support network. I now turn the program over to Pat.
Thank you, Carolyn. A few years ago, Cancer Care, along with Dr. Partridge and several other medical experts, began to examine what were some of the reasons that people were not taking their medication. And interestingly enough, almost 50% of the people reported problems with the cost of medication. Some of the newer medicines can run several thousand dollars a month, and it makes it a difficult choice for patients who have to decide whether they're going to go onto the medication or put a financial strain on their family. This is one of the things that Cancer Care has this distinct concern about, and we would like to try to be of help to you. If you are having trouble meeting the cost of your medication, we may be able to help you. If you contact us directly at our toll-free number, 1-800-813-4673, you can talk to one of our social workers who can describe the services that are available to help you financially. You can also contact our Copay Assistance Foundation, and they can very often be in help with the cost of some of the high copays that are present some of the newer medications. If you have questions or concerns about other issues related, if you are a caregiver and you're concerned about a parent or a sibling who lives alone, our social workers offer emotional support as well. The Cancer Care Copay Assistance Foundation can be reached at 866-552-6729. And you can also contact us through our website at www.cancercare.org. Financial pressure should not be in any way a reason to stop taking medication. And remember that very often not only Cancer Care but other organizations are available to help you with the cost. Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Pat, and really for highlighting that. We don't want cost to be a reason that you are not taking your medication. We want you to know that there are a lot of resources, Cancer Care being one of them, that does help to pay for your medications.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have time for questions, or what we really would like and if our audience is willing to participate in this. If you have a tip or something that's worked for you, because we realize, I think what all of us have said today is that this is daunting. We did the program because there are challenges in taking your pills on schedule. I think Dr. Palos gave you a lot of wonderful tips, but we think that all of you might have some ideas that have worked for you. And so we're going to have a second half of this program where we welcome your comments or things that have worked for you, and please feel free to share them. Or if you have a question you want to ask, you can do that as well. But we're particularly eager to hear any thoughts you might have about things that have particularly worked for you or been challenging for you as well. So with that being said, Mary, would you explain to the audience how to queue up, and we'll take as many comments or questions as we can.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question or state a comment, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, may press the pound key. Our first question or comment comes from Marcia R.
I have often been unsure if I've taken my Arytomex or not. So what I do is, after I take it, I actually put a check mark on the calendar for that day, and then sometimes I found, oh, did I write it down or not? So now when I get my new bottle of Arimidex, I put the date that I started on the label, and that way if there's ever any question, I can count back and tell if I've taken it or if I've missed it.
Wow, that is a fantastic tip, and thank you, terrific. Wow, and do any of our speakers want to comment on that? Because that sounds like you've come up with a plan that works for you.
Carolyn, I think that's such a great tip because it's simple, it's easy to follow, and the idea of being able to count the medication to make certain, I think it's just super.
Marcia, thank you so much. That's really wonderful. Thank you. Our next comment or question?
Our next question or comment comes from Adeline J.
Hi, Dr. Messner.
Hi,
congratulations to the doctor with the baby.
That's Dr. Ruddy. That's fantastic.
I have two questions and a tip. Okay, my question is, what is the correct way to take the tamoxifen? For example, if I take it at 6 a.m., what's the next time frame, the recommended time frame I should take it? Also, I know tamoxifen is an anti-estrogen medication. Is it considered part of the chemo family? That's what someone told me, and just want to find out the truth. And I take blood pressure medication and also the tamoxifen. How I keep myself on schedule is I bought for $3.99 at Duane Reade. It's a week container, and I put my medication in, and then the remainder of the medication, I, like the previous caller, I count it, and I look at the date on the calendar, and that's how I know to refill my medication. That's what worked for me.
Well, Ellen, that's fantastic, and I'm going to ask Dr. Ruddy to address your questions, and I'll ask the others to comment on just the tip that you gave. So, Dr. Ruddy, do you want to start by just in general addressing Ellen's question? Yes.
So I think that's a fantastic tip, first of all. And in answer to your questions about tamoxifen, if you take tamoxifen at 6 o'clock in the morning one day, the ideal time to take it the following day is 6 o'clock. Ideally, you want to take it around the same time every day. However, it does have what we call a longer half-life, meaning that it takes a while, actually, for the tamoxifen to be cleared from your body. It hangs around for quite a few weeks. So the good thing about that and tamoxifen is that if you do forget to take it in the morning one day that you've been going along taking it in the morning, you forget, it's okay to take it in the afternoon. It's not some medications are extremely dependent on taking it at exactly the same time every day. Tamoxifen happens to be one that's not as dependent on that exact timing. So in some ways, that's easier. And your question about whether it's a chemotherapy, it's not a chemotherapy. It's what we call it an endocrine therapy or a hormonal therapy because it works by blocking the estrogen receptor. It's a hormonal mechanism. It's not thought of as a chemotherapy, but it is very, very effective against breast cancer.
Does anyone want to comment on Adeline's tip?
I think that tip, this is Lupe Paula's, was wonderful. I think I see a pattern where folks are counting and they're keeping their calendars and they're tracking their medications themselves. And I think that's very important to, as the patient taking the medication, you have to know what you're taking also. And, you know, sometimes you can't always just rely only on the family. So I really am impressed that both of our tips have been provided by folks who realize that it's very important for them to take a part in this.
Pat, do you want to comment?
I'm sorry. I was thinking about it as she spoke. And I think, again, the idea of taking responsibility and really keeping track of the medications is so important because people sometimes express a feeling of lack of control over what's happening in their treatment. And I think what's important is these people are really taking control and finding inventive ways to handle their own situations and their own medication needs. So I think it's really great that they are so inventive.
Oh, that's such a very good point. Really, we have a very creative audience and very thoughtful in terms of what they're doing. And I have a question actually from one of our online participants, and that is that the whole issue of how to they're taking multiple pills, and the issue of the taking them at different times of the day in terms of the drug interaction between them and the complexity of doing that. And I wondered if Dr. Palos could say a bit more about that, and Dr. Ruddy and Pat, just that a lot of concern about that.
Yes, of course, I'll try to answer that, and then I'll ask my colleagues to also address it. I think it's important to realize that it is a complex situation, and that they're not going to be, you're not going to get like clear-cut answers all the time. And I think that's something that's very frustrating to us sometimes, is that we think, gosh, you know, why can't I get a straight answer? Well, probably because there's not a straight answer. So the best thing to do is just to, that's why I kept emphasizing, is to communicate with your healthcare team. If you notice anything different about your body when you start taking a new medication and you've been on others, that's something important to contact your healthcare provider about. And your provider doesn't always need to be the physician. You can call your pharmacist, and the pharmacist is also very knowledgeable about, you know, side effects and interactions. So if, you know, sometimes when these things occur, it's not from 8 to 5 when you can catch your doctor. And some of the pharmacies are open 24 hours and will have a pharmacist available. So that would be a way. But I think what I'd like to really reinforce or validate is that, yes, it is a complex issue. No, there is not always going to be a clear-cut answer. And, yes, you need to communicate with your healthcare providers as much as possible when you're taking multiple medications.
Yeah,
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Dr. Ruddy. I wanted to certainly agree with that. And I think that just to emphasize also that if you aren't able to take the medications as prescribed, you know, if you've missed some doses, that's also a very important thing to communicate with your healthcare providers so that they understand where you're coming from. They know sort of they may have alternative medications that may help you in a different way or might have an easier schedule for you, especially with medications that we use, for example, to control nausea. Sometimes some of them require that you're taking them 3 times a day, and if that's just not working out for you, if you're missing doses, you know, let your providers know so they can work with you to find a schedule and a medication that works for you.
Carolyn, this is Pat. Particularly sometimes for older patients, and particularly for those who are living alone or don't have close family, it can get confusing trying to keep all the medications straight. I found that for some of the older people have learned to color code the containers that they keep their pills in so that they, by looking at the color, they can tell what time of day they're supposed to be taking it. And again, don't be afraid to call your doctor's office or the pharmacist to ask a question about it. Many people are reluctant to call and ask what they think is a foolish question. And anything to do with your medication or the pills that you're taking is important. So your doctor, the nurse practitioner in the office, the physician assistant can very often answer the question for you if you're worried about disturbing the doctor. And again, the pharmacy is a wonderful source of information. And most pharmacists are very patient about answering questions.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, our next question, please. Or comment.
Our next question or comment comes from Jennifer W.
Hi. I wanted to reiterate the pharmacy resource. A lot of people don't know how great a resource they can be, and they also have, you know, websites to, you know, check the compatibilities and things like that, the medicines. But I'm pretty much the primary care provider of my 88-year-old grandmother, who has probably about 23 medications that she has to take. And I actually stumbled upon a resource that I did not know was available, and just thought I would encourage people to ask their pharmacies. The pharmacy that I go to for her has a blister pack program where they will actually take all of her medicines and package them in color-coded blister packs. And on the back of the blister pack, it has the date on it that she's supposed to take it, time of day, and also exactly what is in each little individual blister pack, like, you know, her metoprolol is a pink pill, and it, like, describes what it is on there. So, you know, I'm not sure if other specialty pharmacies or, you know, privately owned pharmacies offer this service, so I just wanted to say maybe people should kind of ask and get at, you know, get the word out there.
Wonderful tip, and thank you so much for sharing that. And do any of our speakers want to comment on that? That's really amazing.
I think that's terrific, and I hadn't heard of that. If I'd known about that, I think we would have had less stress in our lives for our family. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's a wonderful way to organize and be reminded of when to take the medications. And the idea that they're putting what the purpose of it is on there is excellent, also with the color coding.
I think it's just fabulous. In fact, one of the things I'm going to do is we have a volunteer who comes in. I'm going to have her check with some of the local pharmacies to see if it's available so that we can make the service available to our patients.
And Dr. Roddy?
I fully agree. I had actually never heard of that either, and I think it could benefit so many people. So I will certainly look into that.
So we're moving into a whole other age now where we're having our interaction between our participants and our faculty, and we have some wonderful, it's fantastic. This is Jennifer, that was a wonderful suggestion. We want to go ahead, anyone can go ahead and call and check about this and see how that works for you, and of course discuss it with your healthcare team as well, how that works for you, and it sounds like a terrific resource, so thank you for having suggested that. Thank you. Our next question.
Our next question comes from Nichelle E.
Hello.
Hi, Nichelle.
I'm calling because when I was in the hospital, the nurses provided me all of my medications together in one cup all at the same time during the day. And I thought now, since I'm home, I could continue to take them like that. Is that appropriate?
That's a terrific question, Michelle. That actually is a question that is always the question everyone asks. So I'm going to ask Dr. Ruddy about that. Just and Dr. Ruddy is going to address it in a general way, because but the issue of putting them all together and taking them all together, and I know Dr. Ruddy earlier had talked a little bit about how different medications are processed by our body. So if you would just say a little more about that, Dr. Ruddy, that might be helpful to everyone to understand more.
Sure. Well, it does depend somewhat what you're taking. If you were, if medications are given that way in the hospital, generally it is safe to take them at home, but I would discuss it with your provider just to be sure. There are certain medications that should not be taken with other medications, but in general, you know, they would be aware of that in the hospital and should be providing them you know, safely. I always think a good idea when you're prescribed a new medication to ask your provider specifically, can I take this along with all the other medications I'm taking at the same time? And also, you know, should I be taking it with food? Do I need to take it on an empty stomach? Those kind of instructions are very important for certain medications.
And any other
Just from an individual perspective or preference, some people, you know, they may take them in the hospital because they kind of, you know, when you're in the hospital, you kind of feel that you have to do what they're asking you to do. But sometimes folks have a hard time swallowing all the medications together. So, you know, that would be something also to ask your doctor about. If they say, oh, it's okay to take them all, then that's, you know, you might want to ask, well, then if I don't take them all, is it okay if I take one at a time because I can't swallow all of them at one time? And is there any harm in doing that? So you might just want to, clarify and, again, communicate with your providers about your preferences on how you take your medication, because that makes a lot of difference on whether or not you're going to take those medications when you need to.
And it is almost always okay to take them, separated by a few minutes. You almost never would have to swallow them all at once. I would mm-hmm. want to clarify that. But just whether or not it's safe to do that is something important to discuss.
And there are, in addition to the question that was asked, there are some medicines that do need to be spaced out. Is that correct, Dr. Ruddy? And could you just say a little bit about the concept behind that and why that
sure.
would be?
Sure. Well, certain medications can actually bind other medications in a way that makes them ineffective. So, for example, certain vitamins that might contain a mineral that might bind one of the other medications could be inappropriate to be taking at the same time. So that's something to, to specifically ask your providers.
And should I bring up, although we don't usually discuss grapefruit juice on these programs, what about grapefruit juice? What is the story with that? It always comes up. People are always asking that question.
Sure. Well, there's a cytochrome P450 is an enzyme that is produced by the liver that is involved in metabolizing a variety of medications. And grapefruit juice actually interacts with that system of enzymes and so can either increase the metabolism or decrease the metabolism of certain medications. And so drinking grapefruit juice is not advised in combination with certain medications, and so that's something that you should be able to find out either from your pharmacists. Actually, often are good sources of information for that, but your healthcare provider may also be able to give you that information.
Carolyn, another thing that sometimes comes up for older providers is that they will take and crush a pill or a medication and put it in applesauce or something that makes it easier to swallow. I think that's something that discussion should take place with the doctor about, does this change the efficacy in any way, and is there another form that the medication can be given in if the person has difficulty swallowing?
I think that's an excellent point, because there are certain medications that it's really very unsafe to crush them, and may, a medication that should last all day, perhaps if you crush it, that can kind of speed up the speed with which it's cleared from your system, so it may only be lasting a couple of hours when it should be lasting all day if you crush it, and in fact it could have much greater toxicity if it's supposed to be a gentle release of medication into your system and you're getting it all at once because you've crushed it. That could actually be quite dangerous, and so it's certainly important to discuss that before you crush any medication.
This is very informative. Thank you so much. Excellent. And our next comment or tip or question?
We do have a follow-up from Adeline J.
Oh, hi again. I guess I didn't make my question clear. The tamoxifen is two pills that I take per day. If I take it at 6 o'clock in the morning, what's the safe recommended time for the next pill?
So you take two pills at – you take 20 milligrams at 6 o'clock in the morning?
No, I take I believe it's 10 milligrams. I take one in the morning, and then they said the next one at bedtime.
Oh, I see.
But I was wondering, what's the safe recommended time?
So most people actually take 20 milligrams once a day of tamoxifen. That's the way that most women are prescribed to take it. It sounds like your dose has been split into two smaller doses. So honestly, if twice a day you could say, I should take it at 6 p.m. if I'm taking it at 6 a.m. But as I said, tamoxifen has kind of a slow release, and so it probably doesn't matter much what time you take it in the evening. In my personal opinion, I would discuss this with your own provider. There may be some particular reason they want you to take it at a specific time, but if you're splitting the dose like that, really any time in the evening would be fine, whenever's most convenient for you and whenever you can best remember to take it. It is important to take the full 20 milligrams every day, so you do want to find a time that works for you.
And actually, you might actually want to ask your healthcare provider why they split it, what the reasoning behind that is, as well as the other questions as well. So it's a good reminder to kind of go back, and because your healthcare team, of course, knows each of you so well, and of course, so it's always good to ask the questions here. But then we definitely would recommend that you, of course, go back to your treating healthcare team. Now, there is another question from one of our online participants, and that is the whole issue of time zone travel. What happens if a person is actually going traveling, and they are in, let's say they're on the Eastern time zone, and then they're going to the West Coast, and how do they then figure out about their pills, or is there any kind of recommendations or tips that we can give people to kind of handle that situation? Dr. Palos, do you want to go first with that?
Sure. It's very confusing to have to take multiple medications. Of course, we've talked about that. But it becomes even more challenging when you're having to think about, okay, is this a two-hour difference? Is this a one-hour difference? So, again, I think one of the points I try to make is to plan ahead of time. So if there is a way that you can find out what is the time difference from, you know, the East Coast to the West Coast, is it 2 hours? Is it 3 hours? And then you can look at that difference and then adjust from that point on. So that way, and then if you're confused or not clear about exactly when to take it, that's a good time to call your pharmacist. I can't tell you again, and I think I've heard my colleagues say this also, the pharmacists, they are a wealth of information. I think they feel that they're being underused sometimes because we don't, they do a lot of education that we're not aware of. So they're a good source of information for that.
Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on that?
This is Dr. Reddy. I think that it's just very important to sort of ask your provider or the pharmacist about the specific medications, because it is, for certain medications like tamoxifen, the time of day isn't that important. And so when you travel, you know, from the East Coast to the West Coast and there's a three-hour difference, it's probably okay to just take it at the usual time that you do, and knowing that that's 3 hours different from the day it was, from the time it was the day before. But for other medications that are really have to be taken 12 hours apart, it may be much more important to stay on that 12-hour schedule, and you may end up, you know, it may be important that you get up earlier in order to take the medication as exactly 12 hours after the previous dose. And that's a good thing to have to sort of figure out before you travel if you can.
So prior to travel, it's a great idea that you would actually have this discussion with your healthcare team, with your pharmacist, really work out a plan and figure out how to do this. This is really, of course, we always say planning ahead is always a good thing in general for many aspects of our lives, but particularly in this area, it's particularly important. And I guess I do want to ask Dr. Reddy a question in terms of the importance of this, this program and issue in terms of taking pills on schedule, how very important that is. Can you kind of sum up just some of the real issues here that make it really so important that everyone remembers this in terms of the importance of these issues?
Well, there has been quite a bit of data that suggests that that skipping medications or not completing recommended treatment can lead to worse outcomes in cancer patients, and so related to the cancer drugs themselves. And certainly when you're talking about medications that are what we think of as supportive treatments that manage symptoms like constipation or nausea or even blood pressure, that's an important concomitant problem that can go along with other issues, that taking your medications as prescribed for those problems is crucial to being able to receive the effective cancer treatment that really will fight the cancer. And for that reason, in oncology, making sure that we get optimal, that we help patients optimally adhere to their treatments is crucial.
Carolyn, this is Pat Spicer, and there's something I would like to ask the doctors, because it comes up frequently when we're dealing with patients, and that is people will say, I cut my medication in half. I'm still taking the same amount, but I the pills last longer if I cut them in half. Can you comment on how this affects the medication and the effect it might have on treatment?
Good question. Thank you, Pat. Dr. Ruddy?
It really depends on the medication, whether that's safe. And so before anyone does that, I would certainly discuss it with your healthcare provider and your pharmacist and or your pharmacist. You know, certain medications, just as they shouldn't be crushed, the tablet really shouldn't be cut in half for the same reason that the absorption is going to be quite different if you cut it in half. For pills that are safe to cut in half, Sometimes that makes perfect sense. In fact, sometimes your doctor will suggest that. They'll say, why don't you try a small dose first, and then if that's not enough, try a larger dose when you're talking about something like, for example, a sleeping medication or a pain medication. Mm-hmm. For the specifically anti-cancer treatments, the targeted therapies, the hormonal therapies, in general, it's usually not a good idea to reduce the dose, particularly without discussing with your physician. And in general, any of these things, I would communicate with your healthcare providers first before doing any adjustments to any medication dosing. But particularly for those, if you were only taking half the dose, you might not be getting the optimal effect.
Well, I want to thank all of you as speakers. You have just been extraordinary. This has been an extraordinary call. I want to thank all of you. We must do this again. And I also want to thank all of you on the call who actually have queued up and made such, first of all, fantastic tips that you've given to all of us and suggestions, and also asked good questions as well. So you've been a remarkable audience, just an extraordinary audience as well. And I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour program, and that in planning a workshop like this, we do know that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour workshop. So although the workshop will end very soon, the services that you can access from Cancer Care, those are endless. And just to recap, we have a staff of 50 master's-level trained oncology social workers, and we are here to provide practical and financial assistance, to provide ongoing supportive counseling to you, a chance to talk with someone in terms of the help that you might want to need, that you want to talk to someone about some concerns you might have. We run support groups on the telephone and online. And we also have lots of materials and booklets and fact sheets. And, of course, we do many of these workshops, many of them. Indeed, during the month of June, we have about 11 of these workshops. So please stay tuned. We have a lot of programs coming up as well over the summer. Most importantly, as we conclude the program today, I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone. Very often people do feel alone when they're coping with cancer. I now want you to know that you're part of a community of support and that we are simply a telephone call away, that 1-800-813-HOPE number, and it's all over the materials you've received from us. You are now part of that support of community. So I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.